This is VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
Money.
That's what I always say. You always follow the money.
Yeah.
This is Follow the Money with Mitch Moss and Pauly Howard on VSiN.
Mitch and Pauly will be back on Thursday. Stormy Bonatoni, Jonathan Von Tobel holding it down in the meantime, live from downtown Las Vegas, Circa Resort and Casino, as always. And good reminder, once we return back to our usual time slot, 11 to 1 Pacific, 2 to 4 Eastern, money moves each and every weekday, right up to Follow the Money getting underway. Lots of good stuff still coming up this hour. College basketball, we've got a couple top 25 games coming up. We'll get best bets with handicapper Brian Edwards in a little bit. The NBA comes back Thursday. What should we expect? More reaction from All-Star Weekend as well. Plenty of NFL news, but we start the hour in Major League Baseball. Oh. Pitchers and catchers reported last week. As of today,
we have
the start of full squad workouts. And today you should be excited because we're talking about your favorite team. Let's set this thing up. Time to play ball. So we are going team by team through all 30 in Major League Baseball. And today is the day that your Los Angeles Angels of Anaheim get underway.
A little too early for this. coming off a 72-win season, the Angels, again, just kind of mired in, it's mediocrity, I guess. They're really not a threat to do much outside of potentially go over their win total. So let's start with the changes so far this year. What do you got?
I was going to say, you can't start it off like that. After we opened the show previewing, we were going to do an MLB segment about the Angels. And you, dare I say, sounded optimistic about this team.
So you'll see. Like, there is, let's get to it.
Okay,
and you can diagnose what
let's
I'm talking
get to
about
the
here.
Changes.
So first off, the free agent signings for the Angels. I mean, there's really not much to write home about. Kirby Yates, Drew Pomeranz, Jordan Romano, Alec Manoah, Yoan Moncada, all come in on 1-year deals of about $4 to $2 million. So really buying low on a bunch of dudes who have a ton of injury history. You're not getting any game changers there. You get Grayson Rodriguez via a trade. Josh Lowe from the Rays for the trade as well as a three-team trade. Von Grissom comes in a trade as well. So they've just kind of, you're kind of nibbling at the edges here with some buy low opportunities on some guys. That, to me, is part of the pie when you talk about the upside potentially of the Angels. And again, the upside for the Angels is like 75 wins. I don't think we're talking about anything extraordinary here. Don't forget, they did get a new manager. They hired Kurt Suzuki as a manager, but they only gave him a 1-year contract, so it's absolutely ridiculous. I mean, this is not a serious ball club, whatever. It's first-time manager. We'll see how Suzuki does. So I think there's a couple of points to make here about the Angels. The first is the offseason of buying low on players with long injury histories. What do you get out of these guys? Everyone I named, Rodriguez, Manoah, Yates, Romano, Pomeranz, they all have health issues. Grayson Rodriguez, for an example, he actually could have some upside, like we're going to talk about here, but he hasn't played serious baseball, we'll call it, or at least high-leverage baseball since like 2024 for the most part. So what do you get really out of Grayson Rodriguez? What does your pitching staff give you, really, when you look at it? The rotation as it's set right now, Yusei Kikuchi, Jose Soriano, Reed Detmers, Grayson Rodriguez, and then Alec Manoah on the back end, if he works out. We'll see if that's actually the case. It's a staff that, with the starting rotation, is okay. Soriano's kind of young, so he kind of gives you some upside there. Reed Detmers is young. Grayson Rodriguez, in fact, all three of those guys floating around 26, 27 years old, so maybe you hope that they can start to get it. Soriano showed some signs last year. There was a stretch where he was like one of the best road pitchers, not in Major League Baseball, but one of the better bets in Major League Baseball on the road. Had been absolutely phenomenal. Detmers has been a guy that Adam Burke and I have talked about a ton that definitely has like some intrigue with his arsenal. And then Kikuchi at one point was a very good pitcher for them last year. But Stormy, you look around at the other pieces of this pitching staff, the bullpen, they're not going to be that much better. 2025, they were 28th in ERA. They were 28th in fielding independent. I don't think they're going to be any better this year in 2026. So the pitching staff's going to be a little bit of an issue for this team. And then you get to the lineup, which is, I think, the intriguing part about the Angels. So last year, they were fourth in total home runs. They were only 23rd of runs batted in. There's not a lot of baseball in between the home runs, right? They were very reliant on homers. They were 21st in walk rate. They were 30th in K rate, led the league in strikeout rate. And they've got some young bats in the lineup. Zach Neto was a first-round pick in 2022. Nolan Schanuel, was a first-round pick in 2023. Joe Adell finally broke out last year. You have no idea okay? As an Angels guy, we've been waiting for the Adele show for forever.
Okay.
And last year, he hits 37 dongs, actually shows up here in a big way, almost has 100 ribbies, and looks like he could be their best hitter going forward. And then you got Christian Moore, who came up a little early. He was a first-round pick in 2024. All of this, when I get to the intriguing part about it, is, and I don't think this is going to happen, so I want to make that clear, but you do have young bats in the lineup that have shown some flashes. Schneider's got a hit for power. I mean, he's hit less than 20 home runs. You can't have that from your first baseman. But if the rest of these young guys start to really show some upside, and what if the buy low on Grayson Rodriguez actually works? And what if Alek Manoah somehow loses a little bit of weight and refines the form that he had back when he was at Toronto when he had his best year? That's where the upside and the intrigue comes from. The question becomes, do you really think you're going to hit all of that in one season? And I would say probably not.
I like that you've continuously used the phrase like buy low approach. I saw one of their beat writers, Jeff Fletcher, kind of said what he thinks that the Angels have done is like a lottery ticket approach, is that you have like this collection of young and potentially high upside players, as you've termed it, that you don't have to pay really. And you just see if they hit, and can some of them. And Rodriguez, I think, chief among them, as somebody who in the Orioles system was thought of as being like this really potentially like top of the rotation type of a guy, but has had the lat issues and the lat turned to elbow apparently. And now you're just wondering, is he still going to be that guy or not? Like, I'm kind of excited to see if he can be.
Yeah. I mean, look, this has been the Angels in a nutshell for many years now. It's just buy low on guys. Let's see if it works. Yeah. And if it doesn't, we move on. And then, by the way, we haven't even mentioned, you know, Mike Trout coming off of a year which he played the most since 2019, I think it was. Played 130 games last year. So if you can get Trout to play again, 130 games, by the way, a report, it's fitting actually that we're talking about the Angels today. He was quoted today as saying that he wants to go back to center field and play in center field. We'll see if that's the case. I don't know if he can really move, and you don't want to put any more wear and tear on a body that barely plays baseball as it is.
He played 22 games at right last year, moved to full-time DH from April on, and he said that center field is just like where he feels more comfortable. He said it's easier on his body, would like to play.
Is it? You played the most games in
forever.
That's
what he said. He would like to be in the thick of it. I don't know. So that's it. Let's move this more toward an odds perspective.
In the thick of the lineup, Mike. Come on.
Here, their season win total, as you mentioned off the top, they had 72 wins last year. 70.5 is that number. Even money to the over, -120 to the under. They are 17-1 for the worst record in baseball, which is just fourth on the board. Their longest win streak numbers set at 5.5. Longest losing streak, meanwhile, set at 8.5 to make the playoffs, +750, -1400 to miss. The division finishing position, I know that's been an interesting conversation starter for us for some of these lower level teams, yet they're -175 to finish in last.
Watch your mouth.
+230 for fourth. If you think there's some upside and they can go over the win total, could they finish fourth in the division?
Yeah, I mean, so here's the thing. Yes, I do think there's some upside. Again, in I don't know if all of this hits, like if all the upside hits, if Grayson Rodriguez is great and Joe Adell's going to hit 40 home runs again and Mike Trout's going to be healthy and Schneider all of a sudden hits 25 bombs, like there's really something that could happen. The likelihood of that all happening in one season is very minute. But I do think out of all of this, I think they're capable of getting back to their, like, and it's not that big of an edge in my mind, but, you know, the win total is 70.5. I thought it should be more like 72.5, 73.5. I think they can get there potentially. I think this is a team that, again, they should be a pretty strong lineup for the most part, at least above average when you put everything together in one pot. The pitching is okay. The bullpen's not great. That's going to burn them a ton. And by the way, it's going to be a similar thing as last year. They won 72 games. They got scored by 164 runs. Yeah. They had a worse run differential than the Chicago White Sox. I mean, they're a brutal team.
Third worst in the sport.
Yeah, so it is going to be hard to be worse than the Rockies, who are -424. But I think that there is something here. And again, if you're going to bet over 70.5, it's going to be a sweat to the bitter end. You're going to go into the last week of the season needing a couple of wins to potentially get that over, but I do think they're capable of doing that. I don't think they're so rock bottom that they would be a team that only wins 65 games. If that happens, injuries probably hit them pretty hard, which might be part of it. I mean, again, we talked about all these guys have some injury issues, and let's not get started on the history of the Angels training staff when it comes to keeping these guys healthy. Injuries have been an issue for them for a very long time, from Mike Trout to Shohei Ohtani to all of these guys that have passed through for this ball club. So I lean over the win total. I also think there's an intriguing bet, if you like it or not. This is the fan bet, so don't take anything from it. Joe Adele hit 37 home runs last year. Really started to come on strong. Put $10 on 80-1 for home run leader.
Okay. Can you sell me a little bit more?
I mean, again, he's progressing nicely. If you look at his statistics, he's hitting the ball extremely well. Had a big leap in power last year. I think that's going to continue in that direction. He can be, I think, a home run hitter. And the comfort that he looked like he had way more last year than in years past, he's a very big part of this. I mean, he's got to be it. So if you look at Joe Adele, again, like 80-1. He's also to hit 35-plus home runs, which he did last year, plus 180. That's a small price to invest in this far out, so wait till the season starts maybe. And that'll float around there for a while. But at 80-1, figured, why not? Let's say, give me something to root for because, you know, they're not going to make it to the postseason. So
that win total, should we do a team play on it?
And go over
like we have for
the
Charlotte Hornets this year.
I'm down.
Like, could that be our baseball team bet this season? Right. Should we do it?
Yeah, let's do it.
Okay, you're that big of a believer. Well, this is something we talked about last week because obviously we've been starting kind of from worst to first in our approach as we climb the leaderboard in Major League Baseball this season.
Again, I contest too early for the Angels.
Going team through the teams, but the approach of looking at some of these teams that do have the lower season win totals and seeing if there could be an edge on the over. And obviously, to your point, they had 72 last year. You felt like this number should be closer to 72.5. Is that enough of an edge to place a bet, you think, for the season?
Yes, it is.
Although, why do you make that face?
Because Switzerland scored as 2-1. I'm going to lose.
Oh, no. Yeah. How much time is left?
8:30 left in the third period. So my live betting hockey hot streak has ended.
This is so weird.
Because they're not going to get there. I guess maybe they could pull the goalie and give me a 3-1 lead
to go.
Give me a 3-1 lead and then pull the goalie
for an empty. Yeah.
Come on.
I mean, for this team too, it's entirely possible. Yeah. I'm just very, very surprised. They have, guess how many shots on net Team Canada has?
I don't know.
43-8.
By the way, we're making it official. It's a team play. Angels over 70.5.
All right, let's do it. We got to step aside. As we wrap up Major League Baseball, we actually had some other news come through in the MLB from the Phillies and their star, his reaction to ways a team president was talking about him. Play more coming up here on Follow the Money.
So you're listening to this podcast because you want an edge. But what if I told you you're only halfway there? You've got the mindset. Now it's time to get the toolkit to match. Here's the thing. Pro bettors spend thousands on data and tools, but what they don't want you to know is you can get the same edge for a fraction of the cost with VSiN Pro. With VSiN Pro, you get access to expert picks, public betting data, prop projections, powerful tools, analytics, and more. Tap the link in the description and see why thousands of bettors are already using VSiN Pro to cash more bets.
This is Follow the Money on VSiN.
Get ready to win a larger-than-life World Soccer Championship experience right here at Circa Resort and Casino in Las Vegas, where we're broadcasting from. One lucky winner scores a two-night stay at Circa VIP Cabana for the games at Stadium Swim with $500 in credit, plus $250 in food and bev. Arrive in style with limo transportation and celebrate with cocktails at Legacy Club. Enter now. Kick off the World Soccer Championship at Circa Resort and Casino. For more giveaway details, head to CircaLasVegas.com. That's CircaLasVegas.com. Speaking of soccer, can I just say real quickly, shout out our boy, the Meat Man, Steve Wiss. Both of the plays that he gave me in soccer, cash him, baby. Let's go.
Meat Man knows what he's doing.
He knows what's up. So very excited. Thank you for adding to the bankroll, Steve. We appreciate it. On to other news in Major League Baseball. Following up on our preview last segment, we're going team by team throughout the major baseball calendar. We're going to kind of go through all 30.
Mike, I will tell you right now.
Who's Mike?
Corky Romano would not be the second best player on the Angels. Mike tweeted in, said if the Angels signed Corky Romano, he would be their second best player. Two things. One, that is not true. Two, I know the name. I have no idea who Corky Romano
movie.
Is. What's the movie?
What's the name of the guy from SNL back in the day? Hold on. I got to look at it. Isn't it just called Corky Romano? Isn't that just the name of the movie?
All I know is I know who he is, and I know that I have been forced in my life
Chris
to
Kattan,
watch.
That's his name. Yeah.
To watch Night at the Roxbury, and it's one of the worst movies I've ever seen in my life.
You don't like Night at the Roxbury?
I will repeat. It is one of the worst movies I've ever seen in my life.
I can't believe you're making that statement on like publicly. That's absolutely awful. That is one of the best movies ever.
It is awful. Mm-hmm. Yes, I understand. You can do everything you want. You can do the
you
stupid
break
thing
a window.
Like yeah, you, whatever you want.
God, it's good.
I felt my brain melting throughout that entire thing.
Oh my, I love that movie so
What's
much.
What's the I'm going to go down a wormhole here. Never mind. Biosphere, is that the movie? That was a good one. Biodome.
That doesn't have Corky Romano.
No, it doesn't, but it was a better movie.
That is a good. I like all of those stupid movies, though. That era of dumb comedy was
like mid-90s comedy, the Pauly Shore type.
Yes, that was my entire like language at that time. And to the point where you would quote things and not even realize that you're quoting it. It's just your personality now. That was my life.
Yeah, Night at the Roxbury was awful.
That's such a good movie. It's such a classic. You're insane. You're insane. Will Ferrell, Chris, come on. Anyways, back to baseball here real quickly.
I because you think reciting the actors is going to be like, oh, yeah, you know what? Never mind.
They're legends.
Of course they are.
Will Ferrell's the best.
Sure. I'm not saying Will Ferrell's terrible. I'm saying the movie was
terrible. Watch it again.
No. Come God, on. No.
Be a good time. Come over to the house. See, look, I'm inviting you over again because we're friends.
Okay,
just not to Super Bowls. Come over tomorrow.
Yeah, exactly. I was about in the Super Bowl.
So I wanted to get to this news in Major League Baseball because many of you might remember Phillies, when they had their early postseason exit, team president Dave Dombrowski made some comments about Bryce Harper that were basically that he might not be all that anymore.
And a bag of chips.
And a bag of chips. Here's the quote from back in October. He said, in Bryce's case, of course, he's still a quality player. He's still an all-star caliber player, but he didn't have an elite season like he has in the past. And we can only find out if he'll become elite again or continues to just be good. Also, like, shade to Freddie Freeman here. So you look around the league, you try to think Freddie Freeman. He's a really good player. He's still a good player. Is he elite like he was before? Probably not to the same extent. So it's nothing negative. Freddie's still a tremendous player. That to me is Bryce. And then doubled down saying, can he rise to the next level again? I don't really know that answer. He's the one that'll dictate that more than anyone else. When I think of Bryce Harper, you think elite, you think one of the top 10 players in baseball. And I don't think he fits into that category. Mm. Here is Bryce basically reflecting on those comments made in October. And it sounds like he's still a little spicy about it.
I don't get motivated by that kind of stuff. You know, for me, it was kind of wild, the whole situation of that happening. I think the big thing for me was, you know, when we first met with this organization, it was, hey, you know, we're always going to keep things in-house and we expect you to do the same thing. And so, you know, when that didn't happen, kind of took me for a run a little bit. So I don't know, you know, it's part of it, I guess. You know, it's kind of a wild situation, you know, that even happening. Obviously I didn't have the year that I wanted. Obviously I didn't have the postseason I wanted. My numbers weren't where they needed to be. I know that. And, you know, I don't need to be motivated to be great, you know, in my career or anything else. So that's just not a motivating factor for me. You know, for Dave to come out and say those things, it's kind of wild to me still.
Why did you wear the t-shirt there?
For the motivation?
Well, I mean, so he says it doesn't motivate him, but he sounds pretty fired up. It seems like this certainly got under his skin.
I mean, sure. It's one of his worst years in terms of batting average since 2020. I mean, he said it himself. It was a season that he did not perform up to his own expectations. But I would agree with the sentiment that it's, quote, wild that you would have somebody in your sphere like that come out and double down on some of those comments. I just don't understand what the benefit would be of doing something like that.
Maybe
I guess you're trying to motivate
them. I think that's
them?
That's what it has to be. That's the only thing that I can think of it being. And then he's obviously saying, like, that's not how we need to handle things. That's correct. Not what motivates me. But maybe it does. So if he does end up having a good season, will we look back and say, clearly it worked? If you're the president?
Yeah, sure, I guess. I mean, like, it's just, you know, every day after we get done with the show, you tell me how awful I am. And that's I internalize that. And then, of course, I try to be better every single day.
I tell you how awful I am. And then you tell me to stop fishing for compliments and to get in my car.
Shut up, you were fine. I think it's the exact way I say it every day.
To push this forward, though, from a betting standpoint, Philly's second betting choice to win the NL East for the third straight year. Mets are your favorite, plus 185. Philly's plus 180. Braves plus 190. So very compact at the top. Yep. Once again, with these three teams, how do you see it playing out?
I mean, we lean a little bit early toward Atlanta. You wonder if just with better health, that they're just going to be much better than what they were last year. A season ago, there's a lot of people trying to make the push that maybe when this team got a little bit healthier down the stretch, they could push for that spot. But I think ultimately, once we start to see that this team is fully, you know, everybody's there, their talent's still there, I think Atlanta would be my pick for that division at this point right now.
I want to go back to a little NBA here, if we can, because you specifically put this in the rundown. So this is like your idea coming off of the 3-point competition. Oh. And your boy Konkanipple doesn't get the dub in the 3-point contest, but there is an angle moving forward that you would like to dive into with him.
I mean, it's not really an angle. I just thought this was fun. So Konkanipple is on the verge of setting the record for most 3-pointers made in a rookie season already, by the way. Think about that. That's how good this dude has been. He's been brilliant. So we have a prop up over at FanDuel. When will Konkanipple make his 207th three-pointer of the regular season, i.e. break the record. And so you've got all these options here. March 4th at the Celtics at plus 320. March 6th versus the Heat, plus 340 is the second choice. At the Suns on the 8th is plus 480. Before the Celtics game versus the Mavericks at plus 480 as well. And so you got to kind of sift through these. The dates are not in order because, again, there's different impacts on this, right? If he has a game, because if we remember, I can't remember what the benchmark was, but Curry, the last year, I believe it was, he was about to set some record. And so, you know, the dates were kind of all over the place. If you get insanely hot and you hit like 9 in a game, yeah, then obviously you're going to be a lot closer.
And
to
these are going
to
move all over the place. Sure. So it's in order of the odds of the most likely to the least likely right now.
Correct.
That said, like, for people like me that don't know the answer, how far away is he? Like, how many threes does he need to reach this threshold?
Okay, so there's a couple of things here. First off, he is averaging 3.4 makes per game. Right now, in terms of total three-pointers made, he's at 183. So by my math, don't stop me here, he needs 24. Don't do the calculator. I'm right. 207 minus 183. 207 minus 183.
24.
Yeah, I said 24.
All right. Just making sure.
Did I not say that? I thought I said 24.
I don't know. I wasn't listening.
See, look, again.
I was just looking at you struggling to count and had to check your work.
Math on the fly is always good on the air. Anyway, so if you look at his average, you know, 3.4 points, it makes sense that it would line up with that Celtics game here. As you look forward for the Hornets and what their schedule looks like leading up to that game against the Boston Celtics, there's a couple of options for you here. They play some pretty good defenses early on. They're going to play Houston. They're going to play Cleveland. Cleveland doesn't have like a ton of perimeter defenders, so maybe you can get a really strong game from him there after a game against Houston, which they might be kind of muted. But then after that story, look at the stretch he's going to be on. Washington, Chicago, Indiana, those three teams, he could have some pretty strong performances, which leads you to, I think there's a couple of options if you want the long shot. 10-1 Tuesday, March 10th against the Portland Trailblazers. Excuse me, 8-1. I think that might be something worth circling here if he's got a good couple of performances in his bag in this three-game road trip he's going to be on against the Wizards, Bulls, and Pacers.
Okay, this is a fun one to keep tabs on. I know we did this last year in the NHL season with Alex Ovechkin when he was on the chase for history. And so, yeah, we'll see if Con Knipl can do the same here. Early, so I've asked you this before, but I can't remember the answer. Where do you think the Hornets top out wins-wise? Because we've been keeping track on this thing. They're over our season win total, still seeing if they can get to the 30 threshold for Kelly. But what's the answer?
I'll answer that after this. Now that you mention it, says Chris, Night at the Roxbury is not anywhere near the level of Biodome. Never thought I would have to make that comparison, but it really shows you how bad Night at the Roxbury really is. Thank you, Chris. Appreciate it.
Didn't tag me, clearly for a reason.
No, he didn't.
Because you know that it's... Did you make that up?
No, I didn't. It's right there. Chrissy, right there.
Sounds Chris, suspect. Chris, is that your burner? Sending yourself burner tweets like KD?
I have theories about burners, and you know, I don't want to open that can of worms.
I think we might need to. You get an out for a segment.
It involves people in the betting space.
I was about to say, like, yeah, I would assume it involves people, but... Speaking of people, Brian Edwards joining us next year. He's a person. He's also senior handicapper, majorwager.com. Going to dive into some college hoops coming up after this.
This is Follow the Money on VSiN.
Stormy Bonantoni and Jonathan Von Tobel filling in for the guys here as we welcome you back to Follow the Money on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network, SiriusXM Channel 158, live from downtown Las Vegas, Circa Resort and Casino. Lots of college hoops to get into, not only today, but from a futures perspective. Excited to have Brian Edwards join us here on the Progressive Guest Line, majorwager.com. Also senior handicapper for Vegas Insider, covers the SEC very closely as an analyst for Southeastern 16. Follow him on X at Vegas B Edwards. And let's get right into it, Brian, because we've got a couple really big games with nationally ranked teams in action tonight, Syracuse and Duke. We've also got Houston and Iowa State, but let's start with the big spread at Duke. JVT and I were talking a little bit earlier about, could this maybe be one of those look ahead spots even for Duke here? Big spreads in 20.5. What's your evaluation?
I like Syracuse here, 4-2 against the spread in 6 road games this year. And they have not lost by more than 20, except for when Donnie Freeman was out of the lineup there for a 9-game stretch. And I say by 20 because obviously. We got the number at 20.5. Syracuse playing well right now. And with Freeman, they're 11-6 against the spread on the season. But 5-0 against the spread with three outright wins in their last five back-to-back home wins over Cal and SMU. And when they've been a dog of 7.5 or more, the Orange 4-2 against the spread with a one outright win, and Duke only 5-7. ATS at home and mired in an 0-4 ATS slide and 4-9 ATS last 13 is double digit chalk. I will go with Syracuse. I also like the over. However, I got 141.5 this morning. It's up to 145.5 now, so I can't recommend it with that line movement.
All right, let's go to another one that you've got here on the list. Brian, Stephen F. Austin, what do you like here? Relatively short favorite at A&M Corpus Christi.
Yeah, I love this Stephen A. Austin team led by Keon Thompson, who just dropped a season-high 32 points on Saturday, averages 18.4 points, 5.2 rebounds, 4.3 assists per game. Stephen A. Austin on an 11-game winning streak, eight of those wins by at least seven. They've been a single-digit favorite 14 times this year, going 12-2 against the spread, and 15 of their 23 wins by double digits, 19 of them by at least seven. I'll go with the Lumberjacks minus the 4.5.
Brian, I know you don't have a play in the Houston-Iowa State game today, but sometimes like someone like you who digs into the numbers as much as you do, the value in not having a play can help inform a lot of our decisions that are looking at some of these games. Why was that a no play for you today?
Well, I guess I don't really have that good of a reason because Iowa State has been automatic at home this year, 14-0. Straight up. Now, only 7-7 ATS, but not many numbers this small. In fact, 12 of their 14 home wins by double digits. So it's a lean to Iowa State. If Syracuse does me right, maybe I'll add the Cyclones later tonight.
All right, Brian, I think you'll be proud of me. About 2 or 3 weeks ago, the Florida Gators were an addition to my futures portfolio at 18-1. They seem to be the hot flavor lately. What's a still playable price for them to win a national championship?
Well, we're going to repeat, so whatever works. But I saw 15-1 at DraftKings earlier today, so that's very acceptable. I'm not going to lay the 20-plus tomorrow, but I am going to be looking at the team total against South Carolina. Now, I haven't seen a team total yet, but just by my not very good math, with the total at 149.5 and the total 21.5, I'm thinking 86.5 or 87, and I'll go team total over. I would go up to 88. Florida has scored 86 or more in 12 of their last 15 and 90 or more in 10 of the last 15 and scored 95 at South Carolina a couple of weeks ago. So, yeah, 15-1 future play at DraftKings, I highly recommend. And team total tomorrow night at 88 or fewer, I'll also like that.
Curious, some more details on the Gators really quick before you move on to some of your other spots. This backcourt, how has this looked in recent weeks? Do you think they're starting to figure this out? Obviously, shooting has been a little bit of an issue for them, especially as we've gotten into conference play. But what have you made of this backcourt, and is this getting better for the Gators?
Yeah, it definitely is. In the game at Georgia last week, Xavier Lee and Boogie Flan actually led the Gators in scoring. And Boogie, who's struggled with a shot this year, was 7 of 13 from the field. And Lee had another huge game against Kentucky. When Florida lost all those non-conference games to, you know, high-level non-conference competition and close games, Boogie and Lee were struggling mightily, especially shooting the ball. They're both not just not struggling now, they're both playing good, especially Lee. Lee's playing really good here over the last five or six games. And, I got Florida at number one in my power rankings. People can call me a homer all they want, but who's going to go against Florida in a pick'em game on a neutral court? Please tell me who you're taking. I would wonder who.
Stormy, Xavier Lee shooting 27% from three for the season, but 7 of 16 in his last two games. So might be figuring it out from beyond the arc.
All right. Brian Edwards joining us here on the Progressive Guest Line, MajorWager.com, Vegas Insider. We have talked a lot about this Miami of Ohio team throughout the course of the year. I don't know many people that had on their bingo card that they would be the last undefeated team remaining in college basketball, yet here we are. They're a 3.5-point favorite at UMass coming up tomorrow. Why was that a game that caught your attention?
Yeah, I'm leaning hard to UMass here, and I'll probably be playing it, but I kind of want to be patient. I'm hoping maybe the line will go north of 3.5. But UMass led outright at Miami of Ohio for more than 30 minutes when they easily covered a couple of weeks ago. And UMass has been an underdog 10 times this season, 8-2 against the spread with 4 outright wins. And of those 6 outright losses as an underdog, 4 of them were by 10 combined points. So I think UMass Frank Martin's got a good shot at handing Miami of Ohio first loss tomorrow.
All right. Would love it. It's not that I don't like this Miami Ohio team. It's just, you know, it's like the Breaking Bad thing. Can't keep getting away with it. You know,
you've been looking for spots actively to fade them.
We've got some success playing against them, but we haven't gotten that win. So we'll see if we can get it here. All right. Let's go to the Big East, Brian. Villanova and Xavier, what do you got here? Look aheads for today. We're looking at 5.5 in favor of Villanova, some 4.5s as well. Totals 149.5 or 150.5.
I'm going to go over 149.5, 19-4 run for Xavier to the over in its last 23 games. The last 9, I won't bore you with all the combined scores, but a lot of them have been into the 160s, 70s, and 80s. And their games this year average combined scores of 156.3. And the over is also on a 10-2 run for Nova, albeit at some lower totals compared to Xavier, but I like it over anyway.
Let's go back, Brian, to your beloved SEC coming up tomorrow, Texas hosting LSU. And I know the Tigers have had a rough go of it down the stretch here. Texas laying 9.5. Total right now, I'm seeing 155.5. What's your approach?
Yeah, I like Texas here. 4-game winning streak, 8-2 against the spread in their last 10 contests. They're 11-3 straight up at home. They've won by double-digit margins in 10 of those 11 home wins. LSU, we'll know on the injury report tonight, but probably going to be without their second leading scorer, Max McKinnon, who missed the game Saturday at Tennessee. They played pretty tough against Tennessee on Saturday. But look, this team has been getting smashed in their games here recently. 3 losses in a row by double digits. 6 of their last 7 contests they've lost, and 5 of those by double-digit margins. I like how the Longhorns are playing. I'll lay the 9.5 with Texas.
All right, let's go to the Big Ten. What has gotten into the Badgers? I mean, they got some impressive pelts on the wall right now, and now they have to go and take on Ohio State after a big win. What do we make of Wisconsin's spot here coming up tomorrow?
Man, I got to keep rocking this hot team. I've got them all the way up to – where do I have them in my power rankings? I've got them up to 21, which is way higher than where KenPom and the Net have them. I made them a 3-point favorite. They're 5-1 against the spread on the road this year with 4 outright wins. They're 9-2 straight up, 8-3 ATS in their last 11. Like you said, JVT, big-time wins at Michigan and Illinois, and then smacked Sparty the other night. And Ohio State's going to be without one of their best players, John Mobley. He's out, averages 15.1 points per game, shoots 40% from 3, 87.8% from the line. That's a huge loss for the Buckeyes, who are 5-9 against the spread in 14 home games. I like Wisconsin to win outright. Might be able to get them as a short dog.
Wisconsin, a team you think can make a little noise come tournament time?
I think so, Stormy. I mean, gosh, who's got better wins than at Michigan, at Illinois in terms of, you know, your top 2 wins? The way they're playing, they look like a Sweet 16 team at least.
Brian, awesome stuff. Thank you so much for the time. We appreciate it. Good luck with the plays.
Thanks, y'all. Thank y'all. Have a good one.
Thanks, bud.
Brian Edwards. Again, follow him on X, Vegas B. Edwards, majorwager.com, senior handicapper for Vegas Insider, also Southeastern 16, all of the SEC breakdowns. You guys very like-minded with this Florida team right now.
They're starting to figure it out, man. Like that backcourt, that was the big thing. Xavier Lee, Boogie Flan, especially Flan, he still really shot the ball particularly well, but we know he can. And so if you start to get that together, which it seems to be the case, we already know what that front court is, and they're going to be a very, very dangerous team. So let's go Gators. Like we mentioned, we talked about that 2-3 weeks ago, 18-1, and market's really starting to move and shrink on the Gators here, and rightfully so.
I'm excited to continue the basketball talk a little bit later on in the college game when we have Jerry Palm on to talk through some of the bracketology, because it is like SEC, how many teams are they going to get in? The Big Ten, the Big 12, like it should be a pretty fun tournament when we get there. That said, we got to step aside. More action coming up here on Follow the Money next, VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
This is Follow the Money on VSiN.
here on Follow the Money, live in downtown Las Vegas, Circa Resort and Casino. Stormy Bontoni, Jonathan Von Tobel in for the guys. And we're getting a little bit more feedback about this Night at the Roxbury situation. Chance Copperpot tweeting at us that he doesn't usually agree with me because I drink pumpkin spice lattes, which are disgusting. Mm. False. I mean, not that I do drink them, but they're delightful.
Right. Yeah.
But about Night at the Roxbury, he said that's an American classic, which I still keep on a heavily worn VHS tape. How dare you blaspheme that movie, JVT?
Yeah, it's not a good movie. I mean, I'll just say it again. There's stupid comedies, and then there's whatever that
is. I just love it. And do you know who that guy was? Emilio Estevez, the Mighty Duck himself, man. I kid you not, I was there.
It's hilarious.
It's a great movie. It is. It's so enjoyable. It's so funny. The fact that you're like banging your head on the side and it cracks a window. It's just great. It's glorious.
Yeah, look,
Molly Shannon's funny.
I love stupid comedies. I'm stupid and I'm hilarious. So
I was
you
like,
would think
Emilio!
It would work. It does not for me. It just does not. And trust me, I've watched it, we'll just say, in different mental states. All right. I've tried. I've watched in a mental state in which everything should be funny, and it was not funny.
All right. You know what also isn't funny? What's going on with the Miami Dolphins organization?
Wow, here we
right
go.
Now,
what a segue.
Because we are just releasing everybody, it seems, including Bradley Chubb and Tyreek Hill. The timing, a little bit surprising, I guess, but new regime trying to figure everything out. And it is not just them. There are some other names that we're seeing too that people, they're just moving on. Cold turkey. Time for the next.
Yeah, I mean, this is kind of what I saw last year when I got burned on that stupid win total. That Bills game, man, the fact that they beat the Buffalo Bills,
so,
I mean.
For inquiring minds, JVT had an alternate under on the season win total for the Dolphins that he is still reeling from.
Yeah.
Go on.
Very frustrating, very frustrating. Either way, but this was kind of the writing on the wall, I thought, for Miami, which was, look, this is a team that didn't have a lot of talent, that was probably going to miss out on the playoffs, which was going to slip and maybe lose more games than it should have. They only lost 10. But the whole point here being is that they were, I think, on the verge of somewhat of a rebuild and a teardown. And we saw that transpire as they really fell down the standings, got off to the awful start, made a little bit of a run, but ultimately became who we really thought they were going to be. Now you've got some real questions about quarterback and what the rest of this roster looks like, and you're rebuilding at certain points. I don't think this is a surprise to see that this team would do what they're doing here in this offseason, because it's, I think, time to strip this thing down to the studs and see what you've got here with this roster and try to rebuild as quickly as you possibly can. And by the way, they're actually a really good example of tanking the right way and rebuilding really quickly. Remember the tank for two a year? They immediately thrust themselves back into contention like a year later, 2 years later. So I think that they know exactly what maybe they need to do here, but this is the starting process. And I do wonder, ultimately, what that means in terms of their win total this year, how bad they'll be this year, and where they go on offense at the most important position.
Yeah, so we will get to the Tua element of it in a moment. But for the Hill side, he is still recovering from the knee injury, dislocated knee, torn ACL. He put on social media this morning, "The journey don't stop. From the bottom of my heart, thank you to the whole Miami Dolphins organization, my teammates, the staff, most importantly, Fins Nation, for an unforgettable 4 years. So to everyone wondering what's next, just wait on it. The Cheetah will be back. Born again." So he certainly feels like he'll get a full recovery and get back to his former self. I mean, he's getting older. He's what, 32 years old now?
Yeah, I mean, I would assume that he gets on a roster because of course, the past and the potential.
Sure.
But you've got to also assume that he's not going to be the same guy.
Will he even be ready
at
the start
injury.
Of the season?
Yeah, I mean, that's the other question. With the medical stuff, I mean, these guys, Jason Tatum's going to be back here in like 2 or 3 weeks. So
which is insane. All the stuff that they were doing All-Star game, like talking about the historic return back and the way that the Celtics have stayed above water and played as well as they have without him.
So there's the conspiracy theory. I'll have to look at the date, but the conspiracy theory out there, because NBC has these basketball games now, they moved a Celtics 76ers game. They flexed it. So they went from 6 o'clock to 8 o'clock or whatever it was. So put it in prime time, essentially. So there's a thought that maybe that's the day. That Jason Tatum comes back.
Ridiculous.
It is crazy,
absolutely,
man.
Ridiculous.
These turnarounds are wild. How quickly these guys can come back.
Damian
Lillard.
Marvel.
We just watched Damian Lillard win a three-point contest.
Although,
so.
I actually feel a little bit vindicated because the question I asked you when we were previewing the three-point contest, I was like, well, all he's been doing in his recovery, right, is like getting up shots.
You're right.
So,
I was like, I don't know. I mean, I just
didn't
trust him to finish it.
I'm a loser.
Either way, the whole point here being, with Tyreek Hill, I don't think I would be like shocked if he's back earlier than we expect, but these guys recover at an insane rate. That was an insane injury, though.
Yes. not good.
But I don't think he would be the same impactful deep ball threat. But, you know, I've been wrong a lot.
The Tua Tagovailoa element of it, though, is, of course, the elephant in the room here. And what comes with his contract, he gets benched at the back end of the year. The expectation, at least from everything that I've seen, is that like guys like he, Kyler Murray, they're not coming back. They're not going to play another game in those respective uniforms. So what does that mean moving forward for Miami?
I mean, I would think the Tua's next at some point, isn't he?
It's going to cost a lot of money.
Well, whether he's cut or whether he's traded, I mean, Jordan Schultz, and this is a report, but I think this is pretty obvious, reported that the Dolphins' preference has been to find a trade partner for Tagovailoa. Cut is possible in the end, but that has been their preference, the trade, that is. My understanding is new regime doesn't want it to drag out too long. So
who's going to want to pick up that contract, though? That's like the other side of it.
That's the question. What team would be desperate enough to go ahead and trade for Tua Tagovailoa? And I assume maybe you work at a deal where you're not going to take on all of the contract, maybe. But you look at some of these teams who are looking for a quarterback, and I just don't know what team would be chomping at the bit to go and get him. We can use, for example, I mean, the Raiders, no. Obviously not. And then you look at the quarterbacks that could potentially be available. Kirk Cousins is expected to be available, right? I mean, he's going to go to the top of the list, I would assume, of these teams who are looking for some quarterbacks.
Derek Carr now, apparently, as well, can enter the chat.
Stop. Get out of here.
You saw it, right?
Of course I did. Derek Carr was quite the topic of conversation behind the scenes over at Radio Row a couple of weeks ago. I'll just put it that way when it comes to the Raiders. But I don't know. I would think you have to release him. So Tua Tagovailoa, when he eventually signs with the Arizona Cardinals, that will be, I think, something that makes sense.
$56 million cap hit, 26, 54 guaranteed salary. Nope. It's not good.
You don't like that, Mitt? You don't like that match?
What happens to Kyler? Where's he go?
Whatever.
You just care about the one match.
I mean, Kyler's done too.
They both have terrible contracts. That's right. What I'm saying. They both have terrible contracts. So they're both clearly not going to play with their respective teams.
Do the NBA Russell Westbrook, Bradley Beal swap-a-rooney, right? You know, just flip them. Flip the bad contracts and let's just see, hey, new homes, here
I
we go.
I feel like, is that not also kind of Spider-Man meme-ish? And like,
sure. Right. But one of them could potentially in a new home do something, you know?
Sometimes a change will do you good, whatever it is. More quarterbacks of conversation. And this is, I'm not going to bleed this out, but I do find it fascinating that Aaron Rodgers is such a big topic of conversation now for what are we like on four straight off seasons.
I'll check back in when you're done.
And the will he, won't he return to the Steelers now? And what's that going to look like? Obviously, he's a bridge quarterback, but do you give him another year with the coaching change or Mike McCarthy? You're closing your eyes. You don't want to talk about it. What's your thought?
Really going to do this?
It's the question. It's the most, you just termed it, the most important position on the field. And sure. Aaron Rodgers is always going to be a topic of conversation this until he retires.
I mean, I guess. I don't know. He wasn't good last year. I don't like.
The Steelers are in quarterback purgatory, and they have been since the end of Big Ben.
Yes. He didn't commit a ton of turnover-worthy plays. He cut those down. He took care of the football. At the end of the day, he was a quarterback that threw the ball less than 7 yards downfield, averaged less than 7 yards per attempt, and threw for under 4,000 yards. I mean, I don't know. Let's say he goes back to the Steelers. What's your honest expectation for what that team's going to be, you know?
Is it, well, I think that this gets brought up as much as it does, because you just wonder, do you need a void filler for one more year to draft a guy in the draft and see what you get? And there's all the talk about Ty Simpson for a reason out there to be a first round draft pick, although I don't think that's going to happen. We don't need to go down this road again. There's going to be one quarterback taken in the first round.
We will always go down this road. Fernando the draft Mendoza. Is coming. Come on now. I'd rather go down this road than talk about Aaron Rodgers again. Road. Like all the time.
And yet we have to.
No, we don't.
He is.
We're quite literally in control of the programming that happens at this very moment. We quite literally can choose to not talk about this.
So, last minute 30, what are you going to choose to talk about before we go to break?
What do the Colts do with their franchise tag? Seriously, that's actually a really good question.
Yeah, that's coming up.
Because franchise tag time is coming, and Alec Pierce is going to be a free agent, but you have Daniel Jones and the problem to solve there. So that, I think, is going to be a very interesting dynamic. One of many interesting franchise tags. But how they handle the quarterback position and what they do with Daniel Jones, I vote it would be Alec Pierce or your franchise tag, but we'll see if they actually choose that. But they have two candidates for the franchise tag, and that'll be very interesting to see what they decide to do with it. They hit you with the curveball, huh? You didn't think I had something ready. She didn't think I had something ready for it.
It's the Colts. If you could off the dome talk about anything, it would be the Colts, the Clippers, or the Angels. Like, let's be real here.
That's not fair. I can talk off the dome about a lot of stuff.
Was this one of the most disappointing Colts seasons, given how fun the start was?
Stormy, please. Doesn't even make the top five.
Well, you really thought you could be top seed in the AFC.
We covered it, and we saw it coming. We saw it coming. Not
the
this bad, but we saw
coming,
it coming.
But we didn't know that Daniel Jones was going to die. All right, we got to
set aside. He did not. It's Achilles.
Whoa, we'll be right back.